Hagman and Hagman Report. HagmanReport.com. That's our website. Hagman and Hagman for the show. All venues. And of course, we want to thank Global Star Radio Network for carrying our show. BTR, Blog Talk Radio, as well as simulcast there, as well as YouTube. You're watching us right here on YouTube, and we've got a great guest now lined up for you. On video, coming from his studio is James Perloff. But before we get to him, I just want to say, truth is a lonely warrior. I've said that, seriously, truth is a lonely warrior, unmasking the forces behind the global, destruction. Let me tell you, if you've, if that book or if that title sounds vaguely familiar, it's James Perloff. It's his book. It's his baby. Now, we had mentioned a bunch of things, Joe, on the website about the deep state and about what the deep state is. We had James Perloff on talking about Pearl Harbor and the fact that that was a setup and so many things that people believe to be a historical fact or not. I'm going to kick it over to you.
Yeah, author James Perloff is with us. He's the author of The Shadows of Power, all the way to Truth is a Lonely Warrior, The Case Against Darwin. And last time he was on, we were talking about Pearl Harbor and the different aspects of how the government was aware of what was coming, yet let the attack happen in order to get involved in World War II. James, it's great to have you back on.
Big show, and you have a well-deserved following.
Thank you.
Well, thanks. Where do you want to start, Mr. Perloff? I mean, we could start anywhere. The book, I really believe that anyone listening to this broadcast who has not read Truth is a Lonely Warrior should read that as the basis, the background for what you... I mean, that answers so many questions, addresses so many topics. But let me ask you this. Since you were on last time, and it was really kind of an abbreviated time, you really... I mean, people... last week, we were still getting emails from your appearance. I mean, it was... can't remember how long ago it was, but saying, bring him back on, so you're back on. So where do you want to... Where do you want to focus at this point?
Well, you guys were talking about the deep state. I didn't watch the first part of these shows. That was kind of where we're segueing from.
Well, we were talking about a number of different things, fake news, censorship,
right.
But all, you know, it kind of all goes back to what the power behind the veil, I suppose, the deep state.
Right. Well, that's what I've been dealing with. Just to give people a little of my background, I started out in alternative media before the internet in 1985, writing for the New American Magazine. I actually wrote my first cover story on Pearl Harbor for them in 1986. And in 1988, I wrote, which is still actually my bestseller to date, is The Shadows of Power, which is about the Council on Foreign Relations, which I'm sure a lot of your viewers know about through this book or through many other alt media sources now. And of course, the Council is that organization that was set up in 1921 as a reaction to the U.S. Senate's rejection of the League of Nations, which was the first attempt to establish a world government. And these bankers, the deep state, wanted a world government, and they wanted to change America's climate of opinion. And so the Council on Foreign Relations was set up to establish a world government, and you go back to their flagship journal, Foreign Affairs, their very first year of publication, 1922, the very first article called for America to join the League of Nations, and the second issue called for a world government, and they've been doing the same thing ever since, although they've changed the tactics from time to time. But the other thing to know about the Council is that they are the chief recruiting ground for cabinet-level personnel. And to give you some up-to-date numbers, this is through the Obama administration. We've had 19 secretaries of state, 21 treasury secretaries, 23 defense secretaries, that includes the old War Department, and 16 CIA directors who have been pulled out of, recruited from the Council on Foreign Relations. And because you have one group with essentially the same globalist mindset, that is why you only get cosmetic changes from switching from a Republican to Democratic candidate. Now, we'll give Donald Trump the opportunity to prove what he's going to do, but you know, in the past, it didn't matter whether it was a Bush or Obama or Clinton. They all wanted the global free trade deals, the TPP, the NAFTA. They all continued the same wars. They didn't give people relief. The economy continued to go down. The Fed continued to dictate the economy. And this is one reason why. So that was my first book. And then in mid-90s, I got into the I grew up as an atheist, and I became a Christian in the 80s, and I was still very interested in the origins of man and this whole idea that science had somehow proven that we came from apes and from, you know, we originated from the Big Bang, the universe itself. And when I explored it and found that Darwin's theory was a house of cards, I wrote a couple of books on that. The better known one is Tornado in a Junkyard. The Case Against Darwin is a very abbreviated version for people who don't have time for a long book. But you guys had Sean from SGT Report on recently.
Yes.
And I think he was the guy who actually mentioned me to you guys. But the show I did on him in June on creation versus evolution is actually his best, most watched interview ever. It's had about 900,000 views, because this is a subject that still appeals to people. Is the I don't take it from a theological perspective in this interview or these books for the most part, although I do talk about the social implications when you replace God with a materialistic origin of man, and you take God out of the picture, then you take the Ten Commandments out of the picture, and you get the kind of culture we're in. So it's very relevant, but also just from a pure science viewpoint, the idea that a cell could come about by chance, no way. It's too complex. And the mechanisms they use. And, you know, they, let me see if I can find that graphic here real quick. You know, in Darwin's theory, they say that we started out as a germ, and we went to, from that to an invertebrate, like a jellyfish, and then to a fish, and then the fish wanted to come on shore, and they became amphibians. Grew little legs, and the amphibians evolved into reptiles, reptiles into mammals, and mammals into people. Well, you know what? And if you look at the world around us, there's tens of thousands of species that fit into those categories. You know, there's not one creature on the face of the earth that's in between. No, yeah. They're not there. I mean, the evidence is overwhelming if you really take a look at it. But, you know, I was doing two or three radio shows a week on that in 2001, and then 9/11 hit. And I said, you know what? Nobody's going to ask me to do a show on this for a long time. And it wasn't so much 9/11, but within a couple of years when I started to learn the truth about 9/11, that the geopolitical realm, I realized that's more important for me to work on. And so my latest book, Truth as a Lonely Warrior, is sort of a culmination of what I learned up through 2013 when I published that about the whole history of the Illuminati and the deep state. And so I wanted this to be a book that would be something you could give to a skeptic. And so I start out with false flags. I talk about all the various false flags that have brought us into war, the sinking of the Maine, the Lusitania, Pearl Harbor, which we discussed last time I was here on your show, Tonkin Gulf, the non-existent weapons of mass destruction. And then for the second chapter, I say, well, why do we have this pattern? It's because the same people are running the government. So then I talk about the Council of Foreign Relations. And then I say, but they can't really be running the show. You need money to run the show. Let's follow the money. And we look at the Fed and the bankers. And then we look at media control. We look at Freemasonry and secret societies. We look at the broader organizations like the Bilderbergers. We look at the environmental movement, how it was set up to generate control. We have a full chapter on 9/11, a full chapter on the Vietnam War, chapter on Zionism, and population control. We have a chapter on vaccines, chapter on weather control, just to kind of give people the full picture. I've said this many times, but if you only give people 9/11, you know, they're going to come back and say, well, our own government would never do that to us. Right. And if they did do it to us, then they'd tell us about it on network news. So you have to show them who runs the news, who owns the news, and who runs the government, and give them that full picture, because otherwise it's like giving people one piece of a jigsaw puzzle. If they see one piece of a jigsaw puzzle, it's just a piece of color. It makes no sense. But you give them the full puzzle. They see how that piece fits in, and the big picture becomes clear. So that's what I'm aiming to do with the book. It's like an A to Z primer on the New World Order.
And it's a fantastic book, folks. Indeed. His website, James Perloff, is James Perloff, PERLOFF.com. It's linked off of our website, HagmanReport.com, in the program description as well. I just need to ask you this question. I just want to ask this question. Was there anything in your research of that book? Because your knowledge is vast, and I respect your knowledge. Is there anything in that,
in your research of that book that, yeah, I don't know, you stopped and said, nah, I got to check. I mean, that surprised you? That really, really surprised you?
Well, I guess I'm constantly surprised. And, you know, I think that discovering the facet of Zionism for me was a big step forward. I was kind of behind the curve on that for a while. I just looked on communism and socialism as the enemy. And I knew about world government, but I didn't realize that Zionism was the Rothschild plan to center this world government in Jerusalem, you know, the most holy city for Christians, Jews, and Muslims alike. So there were definitely new developments in my understanding of how the world works since I wrote The Shadows of Power. But even since then, I've made new discoveries. In that book, Truth of the Lonely Warrior, I take kind of a skeptical view of Russia. I've softened my views a lot. Well, recently, after seeing some of the statements that Putin's made and some of the common sense foreign policy measures that he's taken, I've also, since then, if you go to my website, I've taken a different view of, you know, in Truth of the Lonely Warrior, I get a little, I'm a kind of soft on monarchies because I realize that, you know, we're schooled in America to view monarchies with disdain. We look on America as founded on, you know, anti-King George. And when I investigated, I found that King George, he wasn't that bad of a king. And, you know, by 1773, to surprise most people, there were no tax measures being imposed on America at all, except that one tea tax was a 3 cents on a pound of tea. Now, I grew up in Lexington, Massachusetts, which is where the shot fired around the world was fired, and I got pretty interested in that, who fired that shot. And so I have a very lengthy article called The Secrets Buried at Lexington Green. I grew up in Lexington. I walked past that green from high school every day, and I found that that was very much a Freemasonic event. So that was something that surprised me. I never thought that I would come to that conclusion, but that's another one that surprised me. And another one that I've changed my mind in Truth is a Lonely Warrior, you know, I was looking at aliens as, you know, we're I'm really kind of hopping over the map. I'm trying to answer your question, though, which surprises me. I looked on aliens as probably a psyop, sort of a high-tech Pentagon psyop, because there was a book back in the 60s, Report from Iron Mountain, where this think tank was discussing how they control the world. They were talking about how if they could fake an alien invasion, they could get people to unite behind a world government. But since then, I've done deeper research into the works of people like L.A. Marzulli, and I realize that there is a reality to this. I think that aliens are not creatures from another galaxy or, you know, like in Star Wars, who are taking, you know, getting into a Millennium Falcon and traveling at light speed to get to us. I think we're dealing with the fallen angels that are discussed in Genesis 6 and in the Book of Enoch and some of the other extra-canonical books. And I think at some point in the New World Order, I think there's going to be a crisis moment when they do arrive again and perhaps present themselves as aliens, but we're really going to be dealing with fallen angels. So that's something else I've changed my mind on. So, you know, I'm sure like you guys, as you have your informative guests on, I'm constantly learning new things myself and, you know, evolving my own, you know, animals don't evolve. Other than what we call microevolutionary changes. But our thoughts and understandings do change. And so those are some of the thoughts I've had, some of the discoveries I've made that have been new to me over the last few years.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's an interesting kind of a journey, isn't it, Joe? I mean, ways.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, you know, the aliens and fallen angels. That's how I've viewed, you know, the alien phenomenon, if you will, is, you know, military experiments and fallen angel and fallen angel technology. Ever since I started reading the Bible again and reading some of the extra biblical texts, it makes a lot of sense. Aliens don't make sense if you look at it through the lens of the Bible and Bible prophecy. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it in terms of the Great Deception and, you know, when you read in the Bible how it basically says that, you know, you're going to have entities coming, non-human entities, you know, being involved in the end days. And from armies to other supernatural forces like the Antichrist and the false prophet. It makes sense that they would come off as extra dimensional beings.
Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah, I think Hollywood's been siphoning us with all these alien movies, the E.T. and the Star Wars and Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Alien and Aliens and Cowboys and Men in Black. It just goes on and on. You know, in the 50s they had these B outer space movies that became, you know, kind of laughing stock movies, and then in the 70s they started to take it seriously. Hollywood started to put a lot of money into that, and I think it is part of that gradual preparing of our mindset to accept these beings as space travelers coming down, this superior civilization, when they're actually fallen and dark. Because you can be sure God's not, you know, somebody who looks like an ET is not going to be part of God's wonderful creation. Oh. It's going to be somebody who's fallen and integrated with the evil, the demonic spiritual realm that the Book of Ephesians speaks of.
Indeed. And you mentioned the report on Iron Mountain. I just pulled it up here. It's been a while since I've read this, but they lay out some very interesting trains of thought and points of their agenda that they want to implement. Mm-hmm. And going back and reading it, they're so much further along. They've completed a lot of what's in this report, in the functions of war, and then the perceived functions of war. And folks, if you have time, I would suggest that you read the report on Iron Mountain, because it is very eye-opening. And there's a couple other publications like this that kind of hint as to where the agenda of the New World Order global elitists are going. And, you know, back talking about the Bible and the fallen angels, this, to me, Satan is very subtle, the way they implement. He implements different changes in society and ideas that people come to accept. I always say that you couldn't, in the 1950s, put what was on TV in the 1990s. You know, you couldn't go from the way they had TV back then all the way, you know, right to the extremes of the 90s and 2000s.
It had to be
incremental, you know. And this is how it works. And everything that they do for a reason. Which brings me to my point. Trump, a lot of people in the populist movement, a lot of people believe that we are in some kind of reprieve because Trump was elected, and populism and nationalism is coming back versus the globalist and, you know, the big global economies and free trade. Do you think this is just a smokescreen to get people to let their guard down?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I guess he deserves a chance to demonstrate how he's really going to act. And of course, another question is, regardless of what he plans to do, what will the deep state do that maybe they haven't even told him about? I think it's unquestionable that Trump's election victory represented a victory for populism, because there's no question that regardless of whether or not he is a populist himself, it was the populists who were backing him. It was the patriots. And it was, like me, with the people who didn't want to see Hillary get in. And so alt media, they had this tremendous victory over the mainstream media. You know, the mainstream, they really wanted a Jeb Bush, Hillary Clinton matchup. You know, it was going to be another one of those dull, you know, a couple of CFRs going at it with meaningless dialogue. And instead, Jeb Bush got knocked out early. And they really put all their support behind Hillary. They even pulled out George H.W. Bush to say he's going to vote for her. I mean, that's really a sign of desperation. And she lost. And I don't think that was their intention. They're still hammering Trump, which kind of speaks well for him, that the mainstream media is going after him. You know, I was watching America Online during the approach of the election, and there were days when they would have six headlines about Trump, and every one was negative. And I took screenshots and tweeted them, and I said, you know, every single headline is saying he's a racist and blah, 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 and nothing negative about Hillary. Once in a while, they'd have something critical of Hillary just so they could say that they did. But they're still blasting away at him. I'd like to think that he's going to do the things he said. I think he talks, you know, sensible on immigration. We do need that restricted. He is against TPP. I don't think he's going to give us any transgender craziness. And just recently, he's been talking about reining in Big Pharma to a certain degree, and there's even talk that he's had discussions with Robert F. Kennedy Junior about being on a vaccine safety commission, yes, which would be great. I'd love to see that. So if he means that, it's terrific. But again, I'm a little concerned. He's got a lot of billionaires in there, and he's also got a lot of generals in there. You know, he's got a General Kelly at Homeland Security, General Mad Dog Mattis at Defense, and he's got General McDaniel as National Security Advisor. It looks kind of like a war cabinet, which just, I guess, brings us to the segue of what the 2017 might hold for us. But the other concern I have, besides the what looks like a war cabinet, is he's got a lot of Zionists around him. I don't know if you guys watch Brother Nathaniel at all. He's a popular YouTuber, Jewish convert to Christianity, but he's a New York Jew, born and raised, and he did a video about a year ago called Trump's Deck of Jewish Cards, and it was about how he's got all these Zionist IOUs. You know, he talked in there about Jared Kushner and how Trump's daughter converted to Judaism to marry into this Kushner billionaire family. And he also talked about Trump's debt to Carl Icahn, the Jewish billionaire who bailed him out when he went bankrupt. And as, you know, one of the clues to that, he showed how Trump is the only American celebrity to do a campaign commercial for Israeli television for Benjamin Netanyahu's reelection. And that apparently was one of his IOUs. Now, what's troubling is that we now see Carl Icahn elevated to the Trump administration as an advisor at large, no specific title, and Jared Kushner, now senior advisor, which is actually a form of nepotism, that's his son-in-law. And the fact that these, I don't know exactly what your guys' position on Israel is. I'm half Jewish myself, but I have come to realize that Israel is not the friend of the United States that it makes itself out to be, and that we need to be very leery of the Rothschild-funded state and Zionism and what they've done to us from the days of the Levant affair to the bombing of the USS Liberty to the being tricked into bombing Libya in 1986 by the Mossad to up to 9/11 itself, which I've come to recognize as a very much an Israeli implemented event. So having this war cabinet plus pro-Israeli advisors makes me wary that we might see some type of 9/11 event early in his administration. I know you guys, I think yesterday we're talking about this bombing, or perhaps it was today. I didn't see the first part of your show, but I saw on your website the bombing of Damascus by the Israelis.
Yes.
Suggests that perhaps they are emboldened by Trump's administration and think they can start to get really on the offensive. Would that remains to be seen?
Yeah, and in the reading some reports about the airport attack in Damascus, I was reading that it was retaliation for an attack that spilled over from the Syrian civil war into Israel, killing and wounding a number of Israelis. And then I also read what you just stated, the fact that is Israel going to become more aggressive now that you have a president that is more supportive of Israel than Obama was, becoming into power in just a short week. And then you have speculation of people saying, well, yes, that's what's going to happen. And as soon as Trump takes office, you know, Israel's going to attack Iran or going to, you know, invade Syria, which I don't believe is the case. But if Israel does feel safer, I believe they will act more aggressively. We know that the UN and Israel are going through a divide now. And but as long as the U.S. is supporting what Israel does, they feel that they can continue to move forward with their agenda.
And Mr. Perloff, I know we're going to get emails saying, oh, well, the Bible says that, you know, I will bless those who bless thee and curse those who curse thee relative to the nation of Israel. But I think we all have to, I mean, everyone who would write an email to us saying, oh, this is, you're anti-Semitic, I think people have to relax a little bit and understand we're all adults here, you know, and there's a difference between political Zionism, or correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a difference between political Zionism and the land deeded to the Jewish people by God. Am I right on that, or what's your take on that?
You're absolutely right, and I do have a post on my website. It's two parts, the war on Christianity, parts one and two. And part one is how the Rockefellers, funded the modernist movement, which, turned our mainline denominations into largely not Bible-believing churches anymore, like they used to be a century or two ago. But part two is about, you know, the Rothschilds, they always like to fund both sides of a war. We had this modernist fundamentalist split in the early part of the 20th century, and the Rothschilds funded the fundamentalist side through the back door, through the Scofield Reference Bible, which was printed by the millions, came out in 1917, the same year as the Balfour Declaration, so there would appear that God's prophecies were being fulfilled, and Scofield put his notes right on the Bible's pages. And the Scofield Reference Bible was a Bible that was intended to persuade the Protestant community that God wanted the Jews to go back to Israel. But this is this is not the hand of God moving in Israel. This is the hand of Rothschild. You go back to 1829, you can see newspaper posts about the Rothschilds buying up Israeli land. The Jewish banker Edmund de Rothschild bought up so much land in Palestine for the Jewish homeland that his face was put on the 500 shekel note in Israel. But I know we've got a break coming up, We'll hit this on the other side.
Good stuff. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. Our guest this evening is James Perloff. Go to jamesperloff.com, P-E-R-L-O-F-F. He's going to be with us until the end of the broadcast, and we got a number of issues that we want to continue to break down and talk about.
Well, one of the most requested guests, Joe, since he was on last time, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great pleasure to have him. We'll be right back after these short messages. Stay with us.
Thanks so much for your belief and your trust in us. Thanks for your support in us. I want to thank each and every one of you who have sent us an email, a letter, you know, helping us stay on the air and keeping us on the air. We really appreciate that. We appreciate your support. Without it, we couldn't do what we do. And we try to bring you the best product possible and the best guests possible, like our guest now, James Perloff from jamesperloff.com. That's P-E-R-L-O-F-F.com. You're just a prolific author on a number of things, including Truth is a Lonely Warrior, and, of course, The Shadows of Power, and, of course, the Darwinian series, you know, against Darwin. But, Mr. Perloff, if I can come out of the gate here, I want to ask you something, unless we have unfinished business from the last segment. I just want to ask you something here, and we can go wherever you want. But remind me to ask you about your latest article about The Unthinkable Has Finally Happened, Russian and America Have Traded Places. That's your latest article on that. Because I thought that was... You reminded me about something, about an incident that's still classified that... it's just weird. But anyway, welcome back, and let's take it wherever you want to take it.
We could go into that... you know, what I talked about in that article, it's the latest blog post, I discussed the fact that, you know, I was writing for The New American, off and on for 27 years, which was the house organ of the John Birch Society. And in the 1980s, we viewed ourselves correctly as the leaders of the free world. I mean, we had our Bill of Rights, we had our prosperous middle class, and on the other side, you had the Iron Curtain, you had communism, it was a police state. And, you know, I cite there the Black Book of Communism, which I've got on my bookshelf here. Harvard University Press published that. They're very liberal, but they estimated the number of dead from communism around the world at 100 million. That's a pretty low estimate, actually. And the communists built the gulags. They built the Berlin Wall. They created the Holodomor, which killed 6 million in Ukraine. They crushed the 1956 revolt. They were the bad guys. We were freedom. And in 1985, all of a sudden, Gorbachev came to power, and we should have actually taken down our military pretty much after that, if communism was no longer a threat after he introduced Glasnost. But we at the magazine, you know, we were still skeptical because we were used to old communist tricks. And there was a KGB defector. I don't have his book within reach here, but his name was Anatoly Golitsyn. And he'd written a book called New Lies for Old in 1984, the year before Gorbachev came to power. And he predicted everything that was going to happen. This is the highest ranking KGB defector to ever come to the West. And actually, if you see Alfred Hitchcock's movie Topaz, his escape is depicted at the beginning of that film. But his books were ignored by the mainstream media. But he was saying, you're going to see a liberalization in the Soviet Union. It's going to be totally phony. They're just, it's a Soviet trick to get you to disarm. Don't pay attention. He predicted the Berlin Wall would come down, as it did. He predicted that a Gorbachev-like leader would come to power. And more than 90% of what he predicted came to pass. And so, over these years, I've been waiting for the rebirth of Soviet communism in Russia, very skeptically, right into just a few years ago. But recently, I've been watching events in Russia. I've seen that they've banned GMOs, that they don't allow degraded television. They won't let you have things like The Simpsons and South Park on TV. Some areas have even banned Halloween, which, by the way, I know about free speech, but I'm okay with that because Halloween is all about the occult. We've got enough of that in our society where we have Lucifer having his own TV show on Fox and Baphomet on display in Detroit. We're going Luciferian. We're going police state with the NSA and the Patriot Act. We're going communist with things like Obamacare and increasing governmental powers. And in Russia, you know, they are doing quite a few good things for their people. They paid off their debts to the IMF and the Rothschild banks. And one of the things that really impressed me was watching Vladimir Putin through many clips over the years as actually a sincere Christian. And I want to read something for you guys that I couldn't find a text of this, a transcript, but you can see the clip embedded, or I'm watching on YouTube. But it's embedded in my article. If you just go to my website, jamespoloff.com, and click blog. Here's what Putin said in his most recent Christmas speech. Listen to this. Quote, "We see that many Euro-Atlantic states have taken the way where they deny or reject their own roots, including their Christian roots, which form the basis of Western civilization. In these countries, the moral basis and any traditional identity are being denied. National, religious, cultural, and even gender identities are being denied or relativized. There, politics treats a family with many children as equal to a homosexual partnership. Faith in God is equal to faith in Satan. The excesses and exaggerations of political correctness in these countries indeed leads to serious consideration for the legitimization of parties that promote the propaganda of pedophilia. The people in many European states are actually ashamed of their religious affiliations and indeed frightened to speak about them. Christian holidays and celebrations are abolished or neutrally renamed as if one were ashamed of those Christian holidays. With this method, one hides away the deeper moral value of these celebrations. And these countries try to force this model onto other countries globally. I am deeply convinced that this is a direct way to the degradation and primitivization of culture. This leads to deeper demographic and moral crisis in the West. What can be a better evidence for the moral crisis of a human society than the loss of its reproductive function? And today, nearly all developed countries in the West cannot survive reproductively, even with the help of migrants. Without the moral values that are rooted in Christianity and other world religions, without rules and moral values which have formed and been developed over millennia, people will inevitably lose their human dignity and become brutes. And we think it is right and natural to defend and preserve these moral Christian values. One has to respect the right of every minority to self-determination, but at the same time, there cannot and must not be any doubt about the rights of the majority. At the same time as this process at a national level in the West, we observe on an international level the attempt to create a unipolar, unified model of the world to relativize and remove institutions of international right and national sovereignty." And then in parentheses in the subtitle says, Putin is speaking about U.S. Imperium. Continue the Putin quote, "In such a unipolar, unified world, there's no place for sovereign states. Such a world merely needs vassals. From a historical perspective, such a unipolar world would mean the surrender of one's own identity and of God-created diversity," unquote, Vladimir Putin. And so he's talking about the need for morality to retain our Christian identity. He's condemning political correctness, transgenderism, pedophilia. And, you know, when did you last hear a U.S. or British politician talk about the need for morality? I mean, And, you know, this is not just something he just did yesterday. You go back 15 years ago, you'll see him saying, making the same types of statements, but they're not aired in the West. And I am convinced that even though he's ex-KGB, when I heard he was ex-KGB, you know, my guard went up and I said, you know, this is just another Soviet trick. I don't think so. You watch the man, you watch him take communion, you watch him celebrate Christmas in a tiny church, not a big cathedral in Moscow. He goes to a tiny rural church to, and stands with children to celebrate Christian Christmas and bows before God with those children. And I'd love to see our leaders in the West do that. Now, what I said in my article is some people say he's only acting, and I say if he's only acting, give us some of such actors in the West.
Oh, that's very true. Give us that kind of. But your position is, I mean, this is genuine. I take it, and
yeah,
which also speaks to, I suppose, what's your take in using that as a backdrop? The demonization of Russia and everything, how Trump has been supposedly allied with Russia, what's that about against the backdrop?
Well, two things. As far as this being genuine, I want to just say that this is not just Putin. It's all over Russia, the return of Christianity. The public schools now have Christian content, so much so that some non-Christian parents have complained about it. And since 1991... there's been 26,000 new churches opened in Russia and 800 monasteries. And that speaks to the fact that there is a genuine Christian revival. It's not just Putin's speech I'm talking about here, but all over Russia, there's a change taking place of the kind that we pray for in America. There's a return to morality and a turn to faith. And just in November, Putin and Patriarch Kirill, the head of the Orthodox Church, raised a statue of Vladimir the Great. It's in Moscow, holding a cross. He was the man who Christianized Russia in 988. He's repudiated Bolshevism and communism. That's in the past. I was expecting communism to make a comeback during the Yeltsin years, but he kicked out the oligarchs under Yeltsin who were destroying Russia, and there's been a move of God there. This is what I honestly believe. But as far as this thing about Trump and Putin. Yeah, Putin is being demonized constantly. Every day there's something about, I've been making memes about it. I made one that's been kind of retweeted where a dog has this mess behind him. He says, the Russians did it. Now, she has seen a lot of those. You know, my toast got burned, the Russians did it. It's become the universal kind of joke that the Russians were behind everything. The CIA was asked by Congress to produce proof that they hacked the election. They haven't produced any. And remember, our intelligence sources, these are the intelligence sources that told us that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, leading to hundreds of thousands of deaths, trillions of dollars in expense, all for weapons that never even existed. I think it's time to start turning off CNN and stop listening to some of our sources here in America and take a good look at alt media like your show and see what it has to offer. But I will say this, that you know, I still don't know, honestly, if Trump is the real deal. I felt that Hillary was satanic. She had to be stopped at all costs. You couldn't count on both hands the number of scandals that would have taken down any other person. And I do feel that was a victory of alt media. But as far as Trump's alliance with Russia goes, there is an interesting take by a gentleman named F. William Engdahl. And I'm not that familiar with his work, but he's known in all media circles. And he has a pretty interesting take, which I'll just mention. You know that Trump met with Henry Kissinger, and it seems that Kissinger is playing sort of an unofficial advisory role to the Trump administration. According to Engdahl, Kissinger is a long-term old hand at balance of power. And you'll recall that in the 70s, he opened up the door to China with Nixon and Ford.
Yep.
And apparently, from Engdahl's perspective, what Kissinger was trying to do was to counterbalance Russia by building up China, as Russia was the main superpower opposing us at that time. What he says, what you're going to see happening in the coming days and months is that Trump is going to warm up to Russia, but the idea is to make sure there is a split in the BRICS, a split between Russia and China, by kind of starting to go after China, taking down their economy while warming up to Putin. In other words, doing the reverse of what Kissinger did before, which was to warm up to China against Russia. to tell you the truth, I think Putin is too smart for that. I think he's too smart to be played in a divide and conquer game. But that was a take that he had on. You do see that while Trump is being warm towards Putin, not in the way the media says, not being controlled by them, he is taking a hard line towards China. Mm-hmm. You know, the call to Taiwan, which irritated China, and during the debate, he was talking about Chinese steel. And perhaps Engdahl is right. I don't know about that. I'm mostly, more than anything else, I'm concerned about the Zionist in his cabinet. But I also want to stress that there are, as we said before, good things in what Trump had in his platform, some good moves he's been making, pro-jobs moves, anti-illegal immigration moves, and I certainly think he deserves a hearing and a chance before we pass judgment on him. No question, though, that the media is still going after him. I thought they'd lay off after the election was over, but they're still going after Trump every day with everything they can. It's just they're still trying to overturn the election for Hillary.
I want to ask you a question. This might not be on topic, but it's all right. We've gotten so many emails about people who are concerned about his safety and about the inauguration and about how all these leftist groups have really, they're planning on disruption. And of course they're all over the internet and they expect to have just tons of people there at the inauguration. Mm-hmm. So. What's your thought on the inauguration itself, disruptions potential? But I saw something today, and help me out with this. Maybe you know more about this than we do. The head of the D.C. National Guard, which is under it's under Obama. It's under the person who's the president. I get the fact that if you're serving at the pleasure of the president, you're term or your service is no longer needed, 12:01 on inauguration day. But in terms of this, I don't know, Mr. Perloff, if you saw this or not, but the head of the D.C. National Guard, 12:01 p.m. on January 20th, which is next Friday, which is during the ceremony swearing in of Trump, he's no longer going to be, he's gone. He's not head of the National Guard. Meanwhile, he's got 5,000 troops on the street. That doesn't mean, of course, that there won't be any leadership there. I'm not suggesting necessarily anything nefarious, but the timing just really kind of seems odd. Taking a commander of National Guard out at that moment, it's 12:01 is when he's no longer needed. Do you see that? And do you get that, or is that just ceremonial?
I need to clarify this. He's going to have the National Guard called out for the inauguration, and this is an unprecedented maneuver by Obama.
Well, no. I mean, the fact that the National Guard is going to be out during the inauguration is not unprecedented. Nor is the fact that the head of the National Guard, they no longer have their commission as of the swearing in of the new president. However, this is more of a, you're done at 12:01, in the middle of this whole series of events. One could look at it, and there's multiple ways of looking at it. One could look at it and say, he's not going to be renewed. His commission's not going to be renewed under Trump, so he's done at 12:01 technically, but would stay on until there's a smooth transition of that position. But in this case, the Washington, I think it was the Post, I made it sound like, hey, at 12:01, this guy's got his, lunch bucket, bags packed, and he's out the door while it's, 5,000 of the troops are standing there. So, although none of this is unprecedented, the timing with respect to his departure and his relief of command is just really kind of odd. I don't know. I just want to ask you about it.
Well, would that be normal for the commander of the National Guard, that unit of the National Guard, to lose his commission at the time of changing over from one administration to another? Is this have precedent itself, or is this something unusual about the timing of that?
The timing is unusual to the extent that normally there's that transition. They'll stay on, until midnight, we'll say, or the next day. Not at 12:01. This was more precise than any other previous one. So I don't know. I'm just curious.
I hadn't heard about that. I will say that it seems that our military men, which would certainly obviously include the National Guard, seemed to be very relieved to have Trump coming as president. I believe he got a standing O at the Army-Navy game. Yep. They certainly didn't want to be taking orders from Hillary as commander-in-chief. So I would think that there's not any danger from the National Guardsmen themselves. And I don't know. I think it would be if the head of the National Guard was to simply walk out in the middle of a disruptive, chaotic situation, he certainly wouldn't bring any credit on himself. I think he would certainly, even if he didn't have a mandate, continue to maintain that position. So I don't know if there's any significance to that timing, but I would expect that there will be some violence and conflict. I heard that bikers are coming out to be, you know, quelling anti-Trump protesters. We've already seen those massive rioting and protests that occurred with right after the election.
Right.
And it seems that they're still pushing that. The media is still pushing people's tempers. We just saw Meryl Streep deliver an impassioned attack on Trump at the Golden Globes. And it seems that they're really trying to fire people up. It's as if they want to divide this nation, almost like during the Vietnam War with Trump supporters versus, you know, they're exaggerating every one of any fault that Trump has in order to build people up against him, which, by the way, so it would seem to speak well for Trump. The fact that the mainstream media is still attacking him would seem to suggest that maybe he is the real deal to a measurable extent.
See, and you wrote that book, and he wrote, I mean, you obviously, what am I saying? I'm telling you, you wrote that book. I guess my question to you is, so does that give him does that kind of cut his lifespan short if he's the real deal in a sense? I mean, wouldn't that, based on your writings, and I mean, it seems like there, you know,
he's well, he might be in that challenging situation. On the other hand, it's possible that the deep state really feels that they have their hands on him, and that the state of Israel and greater Israel is a high priority for the Rothschilds, who are at the center of the New World Order. They have a very Israel-friendly administration here. I think the powers that be at the highest level may want him to continue there, may feel that he would be useful. It's always going to be a concern for any Trump supporter that he's at risk for assassination. That's certainly been discussed a great deal in alt media. I'm sure that Trump and his advisors are trying to maximize the security around them. It certainly didn't give anyone any comfort to see a security man shooting the Russian ambassador in Turkey recently, which realizes it makes you gives one pause for thought that even when you're surrounded by a security team, you could be vulnerable to some sort of Manchurian candidate within your own security ranks. But let's we should be praying for the president. We should be praying for any of our leaders in any case. But let's hope that let's pray for America. I do feel that we're at a very, very potentially dangerous time.
Absolutely, we are. And, you know, back to the populism that we talked about before, I wanted to run this by you again because I think this is very important in the rise of populism. Reading some of Zbigniew Brzezinski's books and from the early 70s to his strategic vision, America Beyond 2025, deals with this, and there's chapters in each book specifically dealing with the rise of populism and how to best manipulate that into continuing their globalist agenda. And I just see a big problem with Trump. I do agree that we need to give him the space and the opportunity to see what he does. And at the same time, I'm very wary because I see all these people taking deep breaths now that Obama's out of office and Trump got in, not Clinton. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like, okay, this is, you know, we don't have to keep our foot on the gas. We can take a break and take a breather because, you know, the president is an outsider. He's not, you know, a globalist. He's not one of these career politicians. Mm-hmm. But there's just, I'm not as optimistic. I always feel that under what we see going on and what we see presented in the media, that there's whether it's the shadow government, the deep state, or it is directly involved with Trump, that this globalist agenda is continuing to move full speed ahead now that everybody is kind of backed off. And one thing Brzezinski talks about is how to manipulate the populist agenda into more government and globalist controls. And there are even a number of areas outside of Trump's control, from the economy, the U.S. economy, the global economy, the different bubbles we have in the markets and whatnot.
Right.
They could bring this whole house of cards down if they really wanted to and make Trump look like he's responsible for it.
It would be, that's definitely a concern. It would be easy to do that. You know, Janet Yellen has announced she's going to start a series of rate increases, which certainly, that's novel. I mean, they didn't do that all during Obama's administration. Suddenly they think they have to start increasing interest rates. You know what that does? That pressures the stock market down when interest rates are going up. That's a, you know, historical trend for many decades. And they could certainly inflame the passions they've already raised against Trump by having an economic crash, have the stock market crash, have that long-awaited dollar collapse, and say it's all on Trump's watch and it's all his fault, when obviously he's inherited a national deficit at tens of trillions of dollars, and you know, a dollar that's lost 98% of its value over more than a century of manipulation by the Federal Reserve. So he's walking into potentially explosive situation. Yes, they could definitely collapse everything, blame him, and then create the kind of George Soros-funded civil strife that would give rise to justification of the police state.
Absolutely. And another aspect of this, I was reading earlier this week about how the United States government was behind the banning of cash in India and the moves towards cashless society. And it was kind of a beta test, if you will, to implement the cashless society in a whole country. And India has over 1 billion people. And how effective it was, and they're still implementing this, and how many people in India they gave them a grace period of being able to put money into the banks and getting credit for it, and there was a cutoff date, and a lot of people didn't get their money to the banks. I see a number of things that are out of the control of Trump, or seem to be out of the control of Trump, that can manipulate his presidency and manipulate the people in this country as the divide grows, you know, between the left and the right. It just seems like it's you know, Trump's too good to be true, especially in the times we live in. Since I've been alive, every president I can remember in my mind has been corrupt and pushing this globalist agenda. Now I hope I'm wrong, but it seems like we're being given a person who's repackaged to look like something that he's not, or to be set up to make people think that he is genuine, and he might be, but it's out of his control what happens next.
Right, because the president is not the most powerful man in the world as we know. It's usually the shadow state, the deep state behind it, just as you were saying. And that was interesting what you said about India being a test. You know, if I was the establishment, I'd want to test a system like that before I tried it worldwide. But we'll keep talking on the other side of this break.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for managing that. That was a good save there. Go ahead.
We're talking with James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com, P-E-R-L-O-F-F. He's got a number of books. Folks, visit his website, bookmark it, and check out his body of work. It's definitely very interesting and an interesting perspective on a number of important issues. We're going to be with James for the next hour until the end of the broadcast, so don't go anywhere. Stay with us.